Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1.
Dermot Whelan in for Oliver this week. A little warning, some issues we're about to talk about may be triggering for some listeners. So if you are affected by any of the issues raised, you can find more information and support on rte.ie/helplines. But Margot Noonan has been a nurse for 25 years and an advanced nurse practitioner in sexual assault forensic examination since 2012. She's based at the South Infirmary Victoria University Hospital in Cork and provides forensic and medical care to victims of rape and sexual assault. Beyond the hospital walls, she gives informative lectures to a variety of response teams, including the Gardaí. And she also talks to universities and schools, giving consent and relationship talks, tackling myths and misinformation head on. She has invaluable advice for parents and students alike. And she joins us now from our Cork studio. Good morning, Margot.
Good morning, Dermot.
Lovely to talk to you this morning. There's a lot of ground to cover here, but I would love to, before we get into what actually happens in one of the units and the kind of work that you do, I would love to know how you got into this whole area.
That's a question I'm always asked. So I've been nursing 25 years, and I think I've been very fortunate to be in the South Infirmary and noting they had the sexual assault treatment unit. And it was an area that always interested me. And I was very lucky to get the opportunity to go in as a support nurse. And once I was in there, I realised that this is the place I want to be. I've seen the work that's done in the units. I saw what was going on and how they helped people. Sexual violence is still very hidden, and it's very difficult for people to disclose. And all of a sudden, I found a service that was enabling victims to come forward to talk about it and to really help them on their road to recovery. And I was very lucky then in 2015 to be put on the Higher Diploma in Sexual Assault Forensic Examination course, one of five nurses in the country. So it was amazing to do that. And I've been very fortunate to be there ever since.
Yeah. Do you think you have natural empathy? Do you think you've a lot of empathy, and that's what sort of triggered the desire to spend your life doing this kind of work?
I think as a nurse, you have to have some form of empathy. For me, I have always felt very strongly about people not having a voice, or for me, it's around the humiliation and degradation. And that's very much a part of sexual violence. And I feel that, you know, understanding what people are going through, and even just that understanding, helps people to find their voice a little bit more. So while we can't fix everything, I think, you know, I knew it was an area that I had strength. I have, you know, good communication skills. I was a mature student when I came into nursing, so I brought that with me as well. I had worked in childcare for years before that. And I had travelled a little bit and met people in different walks of life and seeing the outcome of not getting the support they needed. So along with empathy, you also need the experience and the expertise and to learn. And it's a learning day every day when it comes to managing people who've experienced sexual violence.
I'm sure it is. You mentioned the word humiliation there, and maybe that's an aspect of sexual assault and sexual violence that people don't really figure on, that it has such an importance. Talk to us about that a little bit.
So the way I would always explain it to young people I meet is that sexual violence doesn't really have anything to do with sex. It's about power, and it's about control. It's about humiliation, and it's having power over somebody and taking the control away from them. And I think that is what really is a huge barrier to people coming forward. You know, that vulnerability that comes with that humiliation and degradation, somebody having that much power and control over them, particularly when it's their own bodies. There's not an awful lot in life that we have control over, but our bodies are ours. And when somebody takes that away from you, that can be very difficult to manage with that afterwards, and to kind of sort that out in your head, how that impacts on you. So that humiliation is a huge part of it, and particularly around the history of sexual violence in this country and many other countries. But, you know, from our own history, we've seen the way the victims of sexual violence have been treated. And even, you know, the court system wasn't always fantastic, and maybe isn't still. But around that, you know, victim blaming has a huge part to play in that humiliation. It was putting focus on victims and humiliation. humiliating them for something, for choices that they made that led to this outcome for them. So I think that's a huge part of what happens around sexual violence.
Mm, and it compounds the humiliation even more. For listeners who don't know, and for myself, what exactly happens when someone comes to an SATU, a sexual assault treatment unit?
Okay, so we're one of six units in the country, and we're a very close network between the six units as well. And I have to say, I think I know everybody that works in all the units at this stage, and they're an amazing team. So if somebody needs us, it can be self-referral, they can come through the Gardaí, they can come through GP, South Dock, Care Dock, whatever they need to do. So just to make contact with us. Mm. We try to see them as soon as we can. We have a key performance indicator to try and see people within 3 hours, but obviously some days that's not possible. Possible if there's somebody, if the unit is already in use, or if there's a delay in them getting to us. So there's three options they can have. So we can offer to take care of their medical needs. Maybe they don't want to report it to Gardaí, or they're outside the forensic time frame. So we have a forensic time frame of 7 days after assault, where we can do a sexual offences kit looking for DNA on the person's body. So they'll be offered a medical if it's just they want to maybe have documentation of their incident, they want to reach into support services, they're worried about STIs, contraception, things like that. The gold standard really is their forensic examination. It's where they come with An Garda Síochána, and we do a full sexual offences kit there, and then that's taken away by the Gardaí, and then we look after all their medical needs as well. And the third one, which came in a few years ago, is this collection and storage of evidence without An Garda Síochána. So this is for people over the age of 18. And we noted that a lot of people that had gone through this were in a very distressed state, and asking them to make a decision about making an official complaint was very difficult, and often lent to people not coming forward to have that evidence collected. So now if the incident has occurred within 7 days, we can still meet with that person. We can do the full sexual offences kit, and we freeze and store that kit for up to 1 year. So what it's doing, it's letting the person catch their breath more or less and decide that now, okay, now I'm strong enough, and, you know, to give them the support. Because a lot of victims, when they come in, you know, they're questioning themselves more than anyone else. And it's one of the most terrifying things for people. So it takes a lot of time to do a case in the unit, and we go completely at our patient's pace. We absolutely, if they want to take breaks, and we will never ask them to do anything they don't want to do. And it's about giving control back to that person, and also looking at their medical needs around, you know, sexually transmitted infections, pregnancy. And we see them for up to a year afterwards doing follow-on STI screens, vaccinations, linking them into appropriate services, whether it's psychological supports or it's practical supports, maybe it's a domestic violence situation that we can lead them in with the right organisations, and for a family, for children and young people under 18, linking them in with Tusla and Barna House, and making sure they get that wraparound care as well.
Yeah. What about the environment of the unit? Do you have to be mindful of noise, people? What elements do you have to take control of in that environment?
So it's what we call a locked unit. And obviously forensic for DNA testing these days is extremely sensitive. So we would be very high on our decontamination. So we have forensic pods is what we call them. And we don't allow anyone into those units because they're the ones that are decontaminated before and after. Soundproofing is a huge issue because obviously you don't want a lot of traffic coming through. So, you know, and people around outside the building. I know for ourselves in the South Infirmary, we're very lucky because we've been there so long, we're very established. And I think every single member of staff inside there are aware of what happens, and they're very conscious if they're aware that there's something going on. But even if they don't know, they still kind of, you know, keep it quiet around the area and place like that. So it really is around us communicating to people in our environment what's happening, what's going on, and then ensuring that our patients are safe. And having a locked unit is very much a safe place for patients. They're not worried that anyone's going to walk in. And sometimes there's a fear maybe the perpetrator is around in that. So having that locked unit gives them that degree of safety. And even how we treat them inside. So we have our own national database. We don't go on the national hospital database. We use our own charts. We use our own numbering system. So even if you attend us in court, And you move to Donegal, or maybe you're in college in Dublin, then we can refer you on to the service in Dublin for your follow-up care. So there's a lot of communication between the units, a lot of working with the rape crisis services, providing psychological support, and then with the An Garda Síochána, with the divisional protective service units as well. So we have those pathways that we can support the patient when they're ready to do them. So having that closed unit and having the space and the time to do it is very important.
Yeah. Do you have to be mindful of things like smells, noise, just the environment itself?
Absolutely. Triggering is huge when it comes to sexual violence. So for us, it's very much around, not having very strong smells. I know that's not always possible in a hospital. We had a youth participation group, young people that came into the unit to give us feedback. And one of the things they had said was the hospital smell, which we're immune to it after 20 odd years in the place. So things like that, having music on, when somebody's telling you a horrendous story and you don't want them to associate with the music afterwards. I know a few years ago, before we got the refurbishment in our unit, we had the one room that we used for everything, and for our patients, going back into the room the second time was really triggering. So the hospital invested money to put in, a separate pod, so they would have two separate rooms for forensics and then one for follow-up care. So the simplest little thing can be a trigger for people. Even clothes, the clothes you're wearing when you're sexually assaulted can be taken as evidence. So people tend to bring clothes with them. They might bring them. And what you find is that they bring their comfort clothes, something they're really comfortable in. And I'd advise against that, because I don't want your most favourite jumper to be associated with being in the unit. So we provide clothes, tracksuits, hoodies, shoes, underwear, whatever they need. It's not designer gear by any chance, but it's whatever we can, the hospital buys the clothes in. And that way then it's nothing, it means nothing to them, which sounds really silly, but it means nothing to them, and they can put away those clothes and not think about it, and maybe go home, have a shower, and then get into their comfortable clothes and not have that association.
What advice do you have for someone who has been sexually assaulted and is wondering what to do?
Never be afraid to pick up the phone. You can ring if you, in your search engine, just put in the letters SATU. It will lead you to one of our services. We're 24/7, 365 day. And because you can self-refer, sometimes people will ring and just say, I think something's happened, or I'm not too sure. And take the time. You'll get to speak to someone who knows exactly, what they can offer you. They'll discuss the options with you. You'll give support. Sometimes it might take a few times before you're ready to come in, and that's okay too, but to reach out, the minute you reach out, we're there to help you, and you're not going to be asked or made to do, you're not that you have to report it and we're going to call the Gardaí and stuff like that. It's not. The first contact is just talk to somebody, and from there, you'll discover what your options are, and we'll support you 100%.
Yeah, you talk about people moving at their own pace. There was a report this week by Rape Crisis Ireland that said that over 30% of sexual violence survivors waited over 10 years before disclosing their abuse. Were you surprised by that, Margot?
No, not at all. Research would show that only 10% of victims will ever come forward. So we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. We're not hearing. I suppose there's a lot of people who maybe don't understand what sexual violence is. Maybe it's an everyday part of theirs, particularly if you look at domestic abuse. Women, particularly in domestic abuse situations, their priority are their families, and the sexual violence is a part of their survival, and it takes a very long time for them to recognise it as sexual violence, because for them it's survival. And I think that's very important for people to understand. You have to go at somebody's pace. Just because you think they're ready to report it, that's not how it works. There's no point taking this on if you're not ready to take it on. So, and that's the reason why we have no statute of limitations for reporting it to the criminal system, is that we understand when you experience this, you become very, very vulnerable. It makes you question everything about yourself and the people around you and the world around you. And that takes time.
Yeah. So it's important that people know there's no time limit on reporting serious sexual crimes in Ireland.
No, there's not.
What advice do you have for people who suspect that maybe a friend or a loved one has been assaulted?
It comes down to communication, and again, it's about control. You know, oftentimes we tend to be fixers, and as a nurse, this was something that I found very difficult, that, you know, we try to fix things, we're there to make things better. And it's really about standing back and giving the person space to tell you. You know, don't force them to tell you, don't question them. You know, we tend to go into, where did that happen? And are you sure? And what exactly happened? There's no need for that. What you need to say to someone is, look, I'm really sorry this has happened. I know of some services where we can get some help. What would you want me to do for you? And I think even that little bit of giving back control to somebody who experiences sexual violence is huge. That will give them a sense of, OK, I can get back in control of this, and let them make the decision, support them. You may not like their decision, but it's not your decision to make. And I think when people see that somebody believes them and trusts them, nobody makes this up. If you look at the courses, very few people will make an allegation of this, a false allegation. And particularly coming through the service, as fantastic as I think we are, it's very traumatic for someone. So it's not something that somebody's going to take on lightly. So it's believing.
Yeah. What about your trauma? What about what you have to see on a daily basis and your colleagues? How do you compartmentalise that? How do you work through that yourself?
What trauma? Oh my God, how long have you got? I think, and I, you know, one of the most amazing things was, in all the schools that I went to, I asked a second year boy, put up his hand and said, "Miss, can I ask you, how do you look after yourself?" And it nearly broke me that a 14 year old asked that question. We're very lucky. I have one of the most amazing teams in Cork that you, I can't sing highly or sing their praises enough. They are absolutely brilliant. And I know I always have someone that I can talk to within my team if there's something wrong, and that's huge. Mm. The support we get from management, the national team is phenomenal. You know, Professor Owen, Dr. Coulter, all these people that support us. And we have clinical supervision with two amazing clinical psychologists that support us. And that's provided to us, you know, as often or as much as we need it. And on a personal level, I suppose I love what I do. I'm very passionate about what I do. I'm very lucky because I get to travel with people on their journeys that not often people get to see. And I do get to see them come out the other side of it. You know, and I keep saying that it's a different path, but you can still be on the path, and that's huge. And I suppose I'm very fortunate to have family and friends who are extremely supportive of what I do. And I live by the sea, and you can't ask for more than living by the sea, no matter what kind of weather.
Yeah. No, it's just great for the head, isn't it? And the nervous system. That's feeling things too much, Margot. What about feeling things too little? Is compassion fatigue something that someone in your line of work has to watch out for?
Absolutely. You know, what we deal with every day is extremely traumatic. And when you become immune to that trauma, it's very much around recognizing it. And I think that's where having a good team comes in. You know, oftentimes if somebody, you know, we start to recognise that someone is burnt out, it's around talking to them. You know, my team will say to me, maybe you need to step back a little bit and focus on a different part of the work for a little bit. And I think that's really important that you do that. I think nurses in general, you know, we deal a lot with vicarious trauma. It's taken a very long time for us to recognise it. My daughter is phenomenal. She told me one day when she was a very young teenager, when I was going on about something, she went, "Mom, I'm not your job." And that was one of the best things that was ever said to me, because if I'm carrying everybody else's trauma, how am I going to help the next person that comes into the unit? So I need to learn to manage it.
Do you find yourself on that note being extra careful or cautious in your approach to your own family? Do you see maybe amplified dangers, you know, because of the line of work that you do?
Not particularly with my own. I think, if anything, my kids will tell you I'm very lenient with them because I trust them. And we have such good communication. The conversations that go on in my house would put grey hair on some people. But I think it does, in that I'm not a great fan of going into large social occasions because I see too much. I'm too aware of stuff. So I tend to keep my circle quite small. But again, it's managing that. It's learning how to manage that and having people to talk that through. And you are very much aware of what can go wrong. But, you know, we deal with the small percentage of the absolute extreme end of the case. And the majority of people are fantastic and people can go out and have fantastic lives and relationships and it's wonderful. So I can't leave a small portion, you know, destroy the rest of all the good stuff that's out there. So it's remembering the good stuff that's there too.
I know you're doing a lot of good stuff yourself in terms of visiting universities, schools. I know you work with the Gardaí in terms of helping them navigate, you know, challenging situations and traumatised people. But what advice do you give to parents and teenagers to protect and prepare them before they go out?
I wish I had a magic formula. I could retire years ago. it really comes down to communication. Honest, open communication. I've been very lucky. I remember from a very young age, my parents always said to me, no matter what you do in life, you can always come home. And, you know, my brothers and I have always kept that with us, no matter what's happened. And I think that's what you need to do. Make your children aware of things that can happen, but give them an out. I think giving them an out is a huge part. I always talk about having a safe word with your children. You know, children don't, especially teenagers, it's a very difficult world they're navigating. You know, there's pressures on them that we've never experienced and we can't experience them because we're not in their shoes. And I think for saving face with children, I know giving them a safe word, you know, that they can text. My kids would text me a word and I know then they're in a situation they need to get out of, they're not comfortable. But rather than losing face in front of their friends asking for help, I then ring up and I can be a complete psycho mommy and I start shouting, you have to come home. And, you know, it sounds like, oh my God, my mother's been such a pain again. She's making me go, I'm going to have to go, lads. I'm really sorry. And I think the important part of that is with the kids is that when they got into the car, I couldn't ask them what had happened. All I could ask them is, are you safe? Is there anyone we need to worry about? And what I found is that they do eventually open up. But if they thought they were going to get into the car and I was going to start hammering questions, who's there and what are they doing? They're not going to talk to me, but they need to trust. They need to know that I trust their judgment. If they're in a situation that's not good, that they can call me to get out of it straight away. And I have no problem taking the blame. You know, parents, we'll take the blame. We'll take whatever. If it means keeping our kids safe, call me whatever you want to your friends. It doesn't bother me. You know, it's really important.
I really like that. I as a parent now, would find that really helpful. And that's something that I wouldn't have thought of, particularly I have a 14-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
I love the idea of that, you know, in her situation, everyone has their phones, everyone's looking at each other's phones, that, you know, there's an option that she can go. I can't explain it, but I know I just don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
We've all had that feeling at a party late at night or something. You're like, oh my God, I don't need, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So I love that idea of the safe word.
Yeah, and I think, you know, anyone that I've met that's used it have come back and said, oh my God, it worked. It did what it was. And it's so simple. It's a very easy, you know, thing. But it's giving your child that safeguarding and it's giving them that they're not afraid to call you. Because oftentimes children are afraid of how their parents are going to react to a situation. And, you know, their frontal lobes aren't developed. They don't think the way that we think. So it's around giving them those very practical things that, you know, if they don't feel safe, text me this word. I think as well for your child to have a safe person is very important, and that's not always necessarily the parents. And I'd often find that with the when parents come in with their children to the unit, the young person is afraid to say too much in case they upset the parents. The parents are afraid to say too much to upset the child. I was very lucky that my children had a safe person each. And this is somebody that I trusted, that I knew if there was something wrong, that they would tell me. But it was someone that my child could talk to without fear of hurting their feelings or, you know. I think that's really important. When we're in close family situations, we tend to mind each other and not talk. And that can cause an implosion within the family. So it's really important to have somebody outside that you trust and that you can talk and is aware of your best interest as well.
Well, we're very glad that you're there, that your colleagues are there. Thank you for the amazing work that you do. Where can people find out a little bit more about it?
So you can go onto the HSC website and if you just input SATU. Also in Cork, we have the Sexual Health Network. So if you put in www.mysexualhealth.ie, that will get you to our services as well. And pick up the phone and ring us if you need anything. Please do. As I said, there is always somebody on the other end of the phone to help you. And we'll do what you need at your pace when you're ready.
Lovely. Margot Noonan, thanks so much for chatting to us from the Cork studio this morning. And if you or someone you know has been affected by any of the issues raised on the programme today, you can find more information and support at sexualassaulttreatmentunit.ie or via rte.ie/helplines.
Email Oliver@rte.ie.